All right, guys, welcome back to the Game Trail Podcast. Obviously, I've been on a hiatus. I spent the better part of a month, it felt like, in Central Arizona hunting elk. Did a recap on the Big Hunt Guys podcast, kind of talked about my late season archery elk hunt, which I was fortunate enough to kill a pretty decent 6-point bull. Had some people reach out and asking, and you know, I like to score animals. It's just kind of fun to know. But if you were wondering and you reached out and asked, that bull is 299 1/8. So Brady and I tight taped it in the office the other day, and that's kind of where it landed. But for those of you that were wondering, that's what he taped out at. I saw some comments, people basically saying, yeah, the photos are it's crazy how misleading they might be depending on the angle. And I completely agree. You shoot that bull from downhill. He died on a really steep slope. Shooting uphill back behind that bull where I could get a position to sit up, he definitely looks a little bit bigger than he might be. Definitely wasn't intended, and not that I care that much, but for those of you that were asking, that's kind of where he landed. Ultimately, just a bull I'm really happy with, especially on a late season archery elk tag. Those hunts are really fun. The more that I've done them, I've done 4 of those now. I really like them, and I'm glad to see that there's some other states like Utah that offer a December archery elk hunt. I think it's a cool opportunity for maybe a select number of people that are willing to do some suffering with the cold and, you know, wet weather and just late season spot and stalk on bull elk. I think it may not be for everybody. It may not even be enjoyable for a lot of people, but for me, I'm glad that those hunts exist. So a state like Arizona that offers those, New Mexico's got a few units that offer those, Utah, like I said already, I just think it's really cool that those are available opportunities to maybe some diehard bow hunters that really want to get out and test themselves and don't mind suffering a little and just get a chance to maybe hunt some better bulls in a late season hunt where, you know, typically the harvest success isn't going to be all that high, but, you know, just gives you a chance to get out in the field. And I like that opportunity. I really like those. I'm probably, you know, I'm going to talk a little bit. This whole podcast is going to be a solo podcast, by the way, and I'm going to probably talk a little bit about why I chose that hunt this year. Kind of the whole podcast this week I'm going to do is just basically kind of kick off to the 2026 application season because, you know, I'm back from hunting. All my hunts are wrapped up for the fall. And just as quick as I get back and sit down, I'm starting to think about applications for the upcoming year. You got Idaho, which is already kind of starting to kick off. I mean, it's already kicked off. The deadline will be the 15th, which is coming right up. I'll touch on it here in a minute, but those applications come up pretty quick. And really you get into January through May, you've got all the various states applications and different species that come up and you got to kind of play your cards right. You got to be engaged. You got to know the ins and outs of the various draw systems in the states to ensure that you actually get a permit for a chance to go hunting. And I'll touch on that at the end, but yeah, overall, I probably will wait a few more years. I think in Arizona, I'll probably apply kind of a take a swing for the fences approach, in that state, maybe apply for some early September hunts and a really good unit and hope that I get lucky and draw a random tag. I might give it a few years to kind of maybe the memory of how rough that country can be, kind of wear off on me a little bit. But, before I dive in with the, full podcast, hit you guys with the promo code. So you can use the promo code GAMETRAIL. That's GAMETRAIL. You can use that when you sign up for a Go Hunt Insider account and you're going to get 50 points back in the Go Hunt gear shop. That's $50 that you can use towards the purchase of any gear that you want in the shop. You can also use that promo code if you are an insider. If you want, you can get a discount. Basically, you can get a 10% discount on almost any product in the shop. So you can use that promo code as well. Also, shout out Matthews. Matthews is a sponsor of the Game Trail Podcast. I'm ready to get out and shoot some more arrows again. It's been a hot minute since I've had a chance to like really get back into shooting. That's one of the things when you're out on a long hunt. You know, I try to pull my bow back and anchor and maybe just do some aiming drills, but you just don't get a chance to cut loose arrows, and I'm really missing that. I'm kind of eyeballing maybe some upcoming shoots. I think there's a decent chance that Cody Frick, who I had on the Big Hunt Guys podcast. He's our new archery shop manager, which if you guys don't know, we have a full-fledged archery pro shop there in the Vegas office now. You can buy Matthews bows, Hoyt bows. I think you might have some Dartons there in stock, but you can stop in and see Cody and shoot those. And he can do any work on your bow. I spent a decent amount of time last night talking with some guys at the big postseason roundup about just tinkering on bows. And, you know, I was able to walk him over to Cody and say, hey, come in and see Cody. Cody can help you out with your tuning needs and kind of work through your problems and probably even give you a little bit of coaching, maybe some tips and tricks. So, stop in and check out the shop. But I was talking to Cody. There's a decent chance that he and I might be out to the Archery Trade Association show in Indianapolis. I know that they have moved the Rushmore Rumble shoot to correlate with that ATA show this year. So there's a decent chance if I can book a ticket, a flight, maybe get a hotel room, as long as I'm out there for the ATA show, you know, cruising and looking for product for the shop and just kind of doing some content there. Might as well take my target bow and shoot some indoor. So there's a decent chance I'll go to that. And then, of course, Vegas. So I've been talking to Neville. Neville came out. We did a podcast last year, but he had a great showing at the Vegas shoot. I was asking him, you know, are you thinking about coming back and doing the Vegas shoot? And he said, yeah, absolutely. So we're going to see if we can get Cody and Neville and anybody that I can round up. I'm soliciting people to do the Vegas shoot. I just think it's target shooting, even though I'm not very good at it, I just think it can't help but improve your archery and just make you that much better of a bow hunter. So that was a long-winded way of saying thank you to Matthews. You know, and talking about archery and bows and arrows in general, it seems like that's always on my mind. But thanks to Matthews for sponsoring the Game Trail podcast. With that, I'm going to jump in and tackle application season. And I'm going to take it from my perspective. So my strategy. It's a little bit selfish, probably, because it gave me the opportunity to sit down today and write out a bunch of notes and kind of outline my goals and objectives for what I want to do for this 2026 season. I hope that in outlining my application strategy that you guys can pick up some tips and tricks. Maybe it'll give you some ideas that you can look into. Maybe you'll hear something that you know, kind of strikes your ear and you can jump into your insider account and pull that up and maybe do a little bit of added research and see if that's something that might work for you. Maybe it's a strategy that you can adopt. But yeah, like I said, in saying that, you'll need to adopt your own application strategy based on your goals, your objectives, the number of points you have, the amount of money that you have to put into applications and permits, the amount of time that you can get away from work and family. Those responsibilities, but you kind of have to adapt it to you. But I do think that right now is the time. It's time to sit down and really put, you know, your fingers on the keyboard, start building a spreadsheet, open up your insider account and start building a plan for this next year. Because if you don't, there's a pretty decent chance that you won't get those opportunities to hunt year in and year out, year in and year out. So, yeah, now's the time. Now's the time to do the work. Now's the time to get your insider account if you don't have one and really start to figure out what you want to do for this next year. So with that, let's dive in. Like I said, this will be kind of my own personal application strategy for the year. First and foremost, I think it's good to kind of outline your overarching goals for the upcoming year for 2026. Some people, they might start with, and I might even recommend that you start with identifying the species that you want to hunt this year, this coming year. I think it's a great place to start. Inevitably, you'll have species that you're more drawn to. You know, I won't mix words. I love archery elk hunting, and usually that's the first thing that is on my list, is I'm trying to figure out how to get an archery elk permit in my pocket. Now, I love to hunt mule deer. I love to hunt antelope, probably in that order, although, you know, deer and antelope are pretty close at this point. I love hunting archery antelope, but those are really my bread and butter. Those are my three species that I'm going to pour my time and effort into, but first and foremost, archery elk, and that's kind of what I build my strategy off. So I think it's important that you sit down and you kind of outline, you know, the species that you most want to hunt. Now, in saying that, of course, I want to hunt species like Rocky Mountain Bighorn sheep or Desert Bighorn sheep or bison, mountain goat. Those are definitely species that I want to hunt. And those are species that I'll apply for in various states if it makes sense. But in saying that, I never really plan to draw those tags because the odds are so extremely long. So the reality is, although I apply for those, probably won't draw them. I hope for them. In a lot of cases, I just look at that like a donation to the state. I look at it like a raffle ticket. But really my bread and butter is always going to be primarily focused on elk, deer, and antelope. And like I said, it's probably in that order. So for me, the planning almost every year, it starts with evaluating and researching how I can get the best archery elk tag that I can. Now, how do I do that? I start first with the individual state draws. I start with the draw systems. I start with reviewing the number of bonus and preference points that I have. And I am researching draw odds and the odds of drawing a tag based on the number of points and the draw systems that the various states offer. So for example, if I'm looking over my points and I see that I have a couple of points in Colorado, maybe I have a bit more than a handful of bonus points in Montana, I have a lot of points in Nevada, but I burned my points in Wyoming and Arizona this last year. And in a state like Utah, I'm on a waiting period. So I drew a tag a few years ago and there's a 5-year waiting period before I can even actually apply again. So I'm on a waiting period there. I also know that New Mexico, Idaho are both random draws. So no point system whatsoever. So I know those are random draws. I know those are opportunities that exist for me. I'm aware of the draw system. I just know that they're out there. So with that, I kind of have an idea already just by thinking through the various states and how their draw systems work and the number of points I might have. I kind of already have an idea before I even get into it of what my possibilities might be. I also know that Idaho has the upcoming draw this year. It's the first time ever for the non-resident general season deer and elk licenses. Now, previously, you know, if you go back far enough, you know, those were available over the counter. There was a time when you could essentially show up in Idaho before your hunt, buy those over the counter and go out and go hunting. Then the demand increased. You know, the zones got capped that much more. So there's maybe less opportunity for non-residents. And what happened that they instituted basically a queue. So you would get up on, a date, given time, you jump in Idaho Game and Fish website. You would log in, you get your name in a queue and they would randomly assign you a number. And when your number, your name come up, you would try to purchase a permit. In a lot of cases, over the years that that system was in place, it got increasingly harder to get your permits because there was also a lot of people that were just driving, showing up in Idaho to purchase their permit over the counter because it was quicker. They processed them quicker. And a lot of those permits were already gone by the time your name come up online if you're waiting. You know, also you couldn't apply or hunt with a buddy. You couldn't plan on doing a group hunt. So this year, for the first time ever, and there's the application deadline of December 15th, which is quickly approaching, what they've done is they're going to do an actual draw. Now, you do have to purchase a hunting license, which for a non-resident is going to be all in about $205, I believe. I just purchased mine maybe 2 days ago. You're going to have to purchase that. There is no application fee, and you can apply as a group with up to 4 people. Also a little caveat of this draw system that they've implemented, you do get 5 choices. I did think it was interesting that they are only going to consider every applicant's first choice before moving to any applicant's second choice, which essentially means a lot of those permits or zones that have sold out in, the past very quickly, those are going to go out on the, first choice. So there's not going to really be any opportunity for, you know, people to draw those permits as a second or third choice. So I am really interested to see how the draw odds look after this first draw. It'll be, for one, I'm interested to see how much the barrier of entry of buying that hunting license is going to limit people from actually participating in this draw. Previously, you didn't have to buy the hunting license until you decided that you were going to actually buy a permit and you could just buy both of those together. I think a lot of people waited in line and when they got their chance and they saw that there weren't the permits that they hoped would be there still available, they just abandoned the system and they didn't buy a hunting license because they didn't get the permit that they wanted. So it'd be really interesting to see how much that barrier of having to buy a hunting license is going to limit the number of people apply. My gut says I think a lot of people are still going to buy the hunting license in order to apply. I think ultimately what's going to happen is your odds of drawing a general season deer or elk license for a non-resident, I think it's going to improve a little bit. I think there'll be less people, but I still think there'll be plenty of people. I also think that now that they're forcing people to buy that hunting license, I think you're probably going to see more people also applying for the controlled draw, which comes up later in the spring. So I think you might see some of those odds actually decrease. So I think it might get harder to draw those controlled tags, but I'm really interested to see how it shakes out. You know, a number of people have reached out and asked me like, hey, what's your strategy? And it's really hard to say. Initially, my gut told me the more popular zones, those zones that I think everybody kind of knows. I think there's been some guys even that have been, you know, outwardly putting them out there, which is fine. I don't know that I have too much of an issue with it. I don't think it's, you know, too cryptic. If you're willing to do a little bit of research and dig, you can definitely find out which ones are the most popular units in that state. But you know, people have been asking me what's the strategy? Is it a swing for the fences approach? You apply for the unit that you really want, that's got the best trophy potential, maybe the best, you know, populations of elk as your first choice, and just hope you get lucky. Do you pick a zone that maybe isn't one of those zones that has historically sold out, you know, earliest? And I think it ultimately depends on what your objective is. So if your objective is you only want to tag if it's in a good zone with decent trophy potential, then yeah, I think your choice is to probably apply for those zones as your first choice and just hope you get randomly chosen in that draw. Hope you're lucky. If you want a tag to hunt and you just want a tag to hunt, I think it's probably a better idea to maybe pick one of those zones that is, you know, under the radar a bit, maybe. Inevitably those types of areas, you know, they may not have the largest elk herds. They may not have great trophy potential. There may not be, you know, good access or good opportunities to hunt. So there's a reason why they haven't sold out quicker in the past. I do think maybe that's a good choice to put as your first choice if you just want to get a permit to hunt. I do think more people are probably going to, you know, apply for those historically highly sought after areas as their first choice. But it'll be really interesting to see. You know, I was talking to a friend today. He was thinking, do you think everybody's going to kind of adopt that strategy where they include some of these areas that are a little less known as their first choice hoping? And I just don't know. I don't know what's ultimately going to happen. A lot of what I'm going off of is my gut, and just kind of my knowledge and having been doing this for a really long time. I think your odds are probably better as a first choice if you just want to tag for some of those understated units, but we'll just have to wait and see, and we'll have to find out. So that was a long-winded kind of explanation of that draw, but I do plan on applying there in Idaho. I'm going to touch on that here in a sec, but before I do that, I've kind of outlined already to you where I've got points and kind of what I'm thinking. So here's what I know. I know that Nevada is a long shot, even though I've got a lot of points. I think I've got, I want to say 14 or 15 points for Nevada for elk. I know that my odds of drawing even units that aren't the best units in the state are still probably less than 2 to 3%. And for the most part, most hunts there in the state of Nevada, I'm going to be, you know, less than a percent chance. My odds of drawing an elk tag there are just slim to none, even with as many points as I've got. High likelihood that I may never, ever draw a Nevada elk tag. So I know that. It's a game I'm willing to play based on the fact that if I do draw a Nevada elk tag, I would consider that kind of a dream hunt for me, to be honest. You know, I had a chance to talk to Paul in our office. He ended up picking up a first come first serve tag in Nevada, went out and killed a great bull. He brought his bull in the office and I got a chance to look at the bull and look at the video. You know, also talked to some of the guys that went with him and look at some of the video that they had of other bulls. And man, I want a Nevada elk tag real bad. It just looks like so much fun. So that's why I apply for Nevada. And it's a long shot, I know that. But with that, I'm probably only ever going to apply for, you know, the units that are going to meet my objective, which is I really want an opportunity to hunt a big bull should I ever draw in the state of Nevada. So it's kind of a dream tag. It's a hope for me. So that's why I play that game. But that's kind of my status in Nevada. It's just the way it is what it is. It is a random draw. It's a bonus point state, meaning that my odds do get slightly better over time. There is always the random chance that I will draw. They do give me five choices. They consider all five of my choices when my application is selected. So, you know, there's always a chance, but but it's just, it's slow. it's bad, not good. Arizona. So I know I will apply in Arizona this year, even though I burned my points just this last year. There still is a random chance to draw in the state of Arizona. They allocate a certain number of permits randomly. So I'm always going to apply down there. It's a great elk state. Just a little tidbit about Arizona. If you don't know, you can pick up your hunter education point by completing that hunter education course. It's a $300 fee for a non-resident. What that's going to do is going to give you a permanent bonus point for every species in the state of Arizona. Also, there's the loyalty point in Arizona. So as long as you continue to apply, you hit that 5-year mark, and as long as you maintain your applications, you keep applying in the state of Arizona, they're going to give you an extra bonus point there, which they call loyalty point. So reality is, even though I burned my points just this last year on an elk hunt, I can go into this next draw in 2026 with 2 points potentially, which is kind of a nice little perk. And I think it's a cool thing that Arizona does to reward people for being engaged in their draw system. So, 2 points is not enough to get me an elk tag down there, unfortunately. Even the late archery hunts, 2 points probably isn't going to be enough points to get me, you know, even the bottom tier units. Knowing that and having done that hunt just this last year, I will probably take a swing for the fences approach in Arizona. Like I said earlier, I will probably apply for, you know, the best hunts in the state, maybe early archery, and just hope I pick up a random tag. I may apply for the late archery hunt, but maybe in a better unit, and just hope that, you know, I get a random tag and for one of those. I do enjoy those November archery hunts, but it might be kind of fun if I'm going to apply, you know, pick up a tag in a unit that's got maybe a little bit better trophy potential, you know, maybe the chance to kill something a little bit bigger than what I saw on the hunt that I did. So that's kind of how I look at Arizona. Next up would be Wyoming for me. So I did burn my points in Wyoming this last year on a general season tag. I've talked about it. Did not have a great hunt. It was not my favorite experience, even though I love the state of Wyoming. Given that Wyoming's application is pretty early for elk, it comes up in January for non-residents. I believe it's the 31st of January, maybe, is the deadline for non-residents. They're not actually going to hold that draw until May. You won't get your results until May. They do require you to front the fees for that permit when you apply. So you have to front the cost of the tag. So they're going to sit on that money until they do the draw. And then if you're unsuccessful, they'll refund you the cost of that license or that tag. So for me, even though there's a portion of their permits in Wyoming that they allocate randomly, you know, there's the chance that I could draw a random tag, whether that's, I apply for a limited quota area with great trophy potential, or if I applied for the general season, West region or South region or whatever it might be, there's a random chance that I would draw that. I think that Wyoming is probably a state that I will skip this year as far as actually applying. And the reason I'm doing that is not because I don't want to hunt Wyoming. I do, but it's based on the fact that I'm trying to plan out, you know, and I've got some other states where I think I can guarantee myself an elk tag. I would rather put my funds into that state. I don't have unlimited money, unfortunately. So I probably will skip applying based on the fact that I have to front the cost of that tag and let them sit on it until May. What I will do, and I would highly recommend everyone do, is that you purchase preference points during the preference point purchase time frame, which is from July to October. So when that summer time frame comes up, I will purchase a preference point for elk, I'll purchase a preference point for deer and antelope, and I will bank those and kind of keep them in my pocket until I do think I'm ready to, you know, I've got the points to maybe draw a general season tag again. And like I said, their preference point system is kind of interesting, I think. It's actually kind of one of my least favorite, I might say. So basically what they do is they give, I believe, 75% of the permits to the people with the most points that apply for any given hunt. The other 25% they randomly allocate with no respect given to your preference points. So if you've got 5 preference points, you don't have any advantage over a guy that's got 0 preference points in that random draw. Which kind of stinks. Feels like if you're buying points, you at least have maybe a little bit better odds in the random draw, but that's just not the case in Wyoming. It's just not how they do it. But I think that's why for me, where I have to front that money, I think most cases I like to just bank those preference points and then keep them until I'm ready to apply again. So that's kind of how I look at Wyoming. I'll probably skip it this year. And like I said, I'll probably just buy preference points. I already mentioned Utah, so I'm on a waiting period in Utah. So that leaves me really with my options to get an elk tag with Montana, Colorado, Idaho, and New Mexico. So let me touch on Idaho. I already talked a little bit about the general season draw, and I do think it's a good opportunity right out the gate to try to obtain an elk permit. I think it's one that you shouldn't skip over because you don't want to get into the later application season and find out that, you know, nothing else really worked out, that you didn't draw a permit. I think you should try to maximize your opportunities to draw a permit. So I think Idaho general season is not an option that you should skip. I think you should play the game and hope that you pick up a general season tag. My hope is that I draw my first choice. You know, if I don't, I did include a second choice for an area that I hope maybe some of those permits would make it to a second choice, but it'll be interesting to see how it, you know, pans out in the end. If I'm unable to draw a general season tag in Idaho because I've already bought the hunting license, I will then also apply for the controlled draw, which comes up in the spring, and that's for those units that are more limited, maybe a better quality hunting experience because there's less pressure, less tags in the field, and maybe, you know, better trophy potential in those areas. So I will apply for that. And, you know, even if I did draw a general season tag, I would still apply for the controlled draw because Idaho would allow you to essentially pick whether you want to keep your general season tag or if you want to turn that in and claim your controlled tag should you draw it. So I would always encourage you to apply for a controlled draw if you've already purchased that hunting license to apply for the general season tag. So that's kind of my hope for Idaho. I'm hoping it pans out up there for me. It's always fun to get an elk tag in your pocket because then it gives you some options. You know, you can, you know, be a little bit more strategic, I guess. You can kind of swing for the fences with maybe some other states, you know, like a Colorado. Maybe you make a different decision. New Mexico, maybe you make a different decision in your hunt choices because you've already got a permit to go hunting. And so I'm kind of hoping that pans out, but that's how I'm going to approach Idaho this year. Moving over into New Mexico. So New Mexico is also a state that I always apply for. It's an every year application for me, specifically for elk. You know, other species like bighorn sheep or ibex, I may not apply for, you know, orcs. Those ones I may not apply for because you do have to front the cost of those permits when you apply. And it's expensive. I mean, you could float a lot of money. I think you could float, you know, pushing 20 grand, to be honest, if you applied for all species there in New Mexico. And they do refund you pretty quick. If you're unsuccessful in the draw, they do kick back those refunds within about 10 days of that result coming out. So I would say that they're pretty good at that, but it's a lot of money to consider floating. So I don't often apply for every species in New Mexico. Most often it's pretty much elk and oddad. I do like oddad. I like those Barbary sheep. So I do apply for those, and the permits are only about $350, which is one of the reasons I do that is because I feel like I can float that and you know, not upset my family budget too badly. So that's kind of how I look at it. But I always apply for elk. One of the things I really like about New Mexico is that they give you three choices, and they're going to consider all three of your choices when your application's considered and before they move to the next application. So you could draw any of your three choices. I think it's cool because it allows me to take a swing for the fences approach on my first choice. You know, I can apply for the best of the best unit in the entire state should my application be the first one off the pile. And then I can kind of taper my choices with hunts that have better odds of drawing, but maybe don't have quite the trophy potential that the top tier units do. So that's kind of how I approach New Mexico. And like I said, it's always a state that I apply for because it's completely random. I'm not penalized if I haven't, applied for a lot of years, or if I drew a tag last year. There's no points to burn or anything like that. So I always apply in New Mexico. You do have to buy a hunting license, which I think is about $69, $79, I want to say. That's non-refundable. You have to pay some application fees, which I think are about $13 per species. So you're going to be into it some money that's non-refundable. You do have to front the cost, but I always think, you know, the random chance to get an elk tag in New Mexico is completely worth it to me. Should I draw a New Mexico elk tag? I may forfeit some other tags. Like if I got an Idaho tag and then I drew a New Mexico tag, I might turn that Idaho tag back in, because I've just had such good hunts in New Mexico. I just feel like it's such a special place. They got great elk herds, good quality, and I've never, ever had a bad rut elk hunt in the state of New Mexico. So I would always plan on applying in New Mexico, and I will this year. That moves me down to maybe Montana and Colorado. So Montana's draw system, I'm going to pause for a sec if you don't mind. I'll take a little drink. Because I'm getting hoarse. I've had a cold for probably, I've been calling it a man cold, because it's a true man cold. You know, I've been pretty sick, sicker than usual. Anyway, but it's been going on for about 12 days. So I apologize if I'm a little bit hoarse. Montana. So Montana's draw system, it's it's a bit of a mess, for lack of a better word. I'll do my best to explain it, to touch on it. And I'm going to kind of talk about my strategy and how I look at Montana. So first, in Montana, a non-resident would have to apply for a general season combo license. And you would have to front the cost of that license when you apply. And that general season combo license, their draw system is a bit of a hybrid, meaning that the bulk of the permits are going to be allocated to the people with the most preference points that apply. Runs on a preference point system. The remainder of the permits are going to be randomly allocated to the applicants with 0 points. It's kind of a strange system. So ultimately what that means is, if you found yourself with one preference point, likelihood is you don't have enough preference points to draw in the preference point system, but you have no chance of drawing in the random system because you got 1 point. People with 0 points are the only ones that have that opportunity to draw randomly. So it kind of leaves you in this conundrum of like, what do I do? Do I not buy preference points and I just randomly try to draw with 0 points year in, year out? Or do you build a couple preference points and apply so that you are guaranteed maybe every other year, every 2 years? It's just kind of a weird system, and it's one that you kind of got to pay attention to. You got to look at and decide what it is that you want to do. The other weird thing about Montana is that you have to draw that general season combo tag before your application for those special limited quota hunts is even considered. Now, you apply for those at the same time, but your special limited quota hunt, should you apply for one, will only be in the draw, actually, if you're successful in drawing a general season combo tag. So I know that's a little bit confusing. If you need to go back and rewind that 10 or 15 seconds and listen to it again, you can. But your special limited quota permit, should you apply for it, that's the one I'm interested in. That's the one I want. I'm not really all that interested in the general season combo license in the state of Montana. Now, the special limited quota licenses, those are allocated on a bonus point system, meaning that it's a random draw, but the more bonus points that you have, the better your odds get of drawing those special limited quota permits. Now, if you look at the draws in your Go Hunt Insider account, you hit a point level where it's not guaranteed. It's never guaranteed because it's a random draw. But you hit a point level, depending on the hunt, where you're pretty well guaranteed. Like you have really, really high odds of drawing a tag. So you can kind of predict decently well when you're going to draw that special limited quota tag. Now, those special limited quota tags, I've already said, that's the one that I'm interested in. I'm not really all that interested in driving all the way to Montana from southern Utah to hunt general season elk in Montana. I might be if nothing else comes up. If I strike out in Idaho, if I can't get anything in Colorado, which I'll touch on here in a sec, you know, if that's the only permit that I've got, then maybe. But for me, what I'm really interested in are those special limited quota permits. So what I will do in Montana is I'll apply for the combo. I'll apply for the special limited quota. I should draw. I've got the 2 points that I need to draw the general season combo license. And then I hope that I draw that special limited quota. Now, if I don't, my option is to keep that tag or to return it for an 80% refund, which is what I will probably do. So it's going to cost me, you know, a couple $100, to be honest. I'll be out that money. It's non-refundable. That difference in the 20%, you know, that they're going to keep. So that's kind of a bummer, but that's kind of where I'm at with Montana. And again, it could change based on how the other states go. And this is like draw applications and this whole draw season, there's an ebb and flow to it. You know, it's like if this, then that, if this, then that. You're just kind of playing a game, you know, you're trying to make your choices as those various draws open and close and just kind of see what happens and see what comes in. So that's kind of my take on Montana. It's kind of what I'm looking for. Hopefully, I would really love to draw one of those limited quota permits. You know, if I look at my elk portfolio, if you will, for this year, you know, if I set aside Nevada, because it's not really that feasible anyway. I'm talking about the ones that I think are relatively realistic. That's the one I hope I draw. That's a tag that I would really like to go on. There's been some areas up that I've been looking at that I think are really intriguing, really interesting, types of areas that I think I would really excel at and hunt well. So that's what I'm really ultimately hoping for. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it. Now, lastly, Colorado. So Colorado it's interesting right now. I've got a couple of preference points in Colorado. I burned mine year before last. I might only have 1 point actually at this stage, one or two. I can't remember. My years are running together, but I know there are tags that I could draw with the point or 2 points that I have. I've also been monitoring the draw odds since this last year when they made the OTC tags previously OTC tags for non-residents, since they made those a draw. I monitored that situation pretty closely to see what was drawn as a second choice, as a third choice, you know, what ultimately ended up hitting the leftover list. So I was kind of watching to see what units had permits that kind of leaked out the bottom, if you will. And I know that there are some of those. So there is the feasibility, the possibility that I could apply for a preference point as my first choice, build another preference point, and potentially apply for one of these units that had leftover tags or tags that were drawn as a second choice last year and draw one of those tags as a second choice, which would allow me to build a preference point, get a permit for my second choice, and go hunting this year. Now, the thing that's interesting about Colorado is this looming draw change, that there's some potential to kind of really mix things up in 2028. So what they're going to do is they're going to adopt kind of a Utah type system where they're going to take 50% of the permits for any given hunt, and they're going to allocate those to the people with the most preference points. The other 50% of the permits for that hunt are going to be randomly allocated, and they're going to give weight to the number of preference points you have, meaning that if I got 5 points, I'm going to have better odds in that random draw than a guy with 0 points that applies. So I have decisions to make. Do I burn my 1 or 2 points this year on a 1 or 2 point unit? Or do I apply and gain a preference point and try to draw a tag as my second choice? It's just one of those things that I'm thinking about. I know that once that draw change happens, my points are going to be worth less because there are going to be 50% less permits available to people with the most points that apply for any given hunt. I also know that I could potentially, when that change happens, apply for hunts that I've never had an opportunity to draw. I could apply for a unit 10 or 2 or 201, which is a unit that I could never draw as a non-resident because I never would have built up the number of points. And my odds for drawing those tags are going to be slim to none, but I've got a chance. And the more preference points I have, the better chance that I have. Now, as I think about this, I think it's less of an interesting situation for me because I don't have that many points. I think if you're somebody that has built up a lot of points and you're sitting on a pile of them, I think you probably ought to burn them, to be honest, because like I said, your points are going to be worthless because there's less permits available to the people with the most points. So I think you ought to burn them. I think you ought to get in on a hunt and go on a hunt, find one that's kind of within your area of the points that you have, and I think you ought to burn them. For me, it's really not that big of a deal, to be honest, because the difference between a hunt I could draw as a second choice or a hunt that I could draw with 1 or 2 points is probably not that big of a difference, to be honest. So it might be interesting to me. And I think that's ultimately what I've decided I'm going to do is keep building points. I'm going to build some points, I think. And I think I might try to take some points into that 2028 draw in the years in the future beyond that with some points to see, kind of test my random chances in some of these units that I've maybe never really ever had a chance to. And I think I'm probably going to try a leftover tag as a second choice. Leftover, I mean leftover last year. Try to draw one of those as a second choice, which would guarantee me an elk tag. So as I look at my entire strategy for elk, I would say Colorado is probably my best bet to assure myself an elk tag. And again, I could guarantee myself an elk tag in one of those 1 point units because there's definitely some options there. Or, you know, I could apply for one of those that were left over last year. And although things change, I feel relatively confident that I could still draw one of those as a second choice this year. So that's kind of my best bet. I am hoping, as I talk my way through this, I am always hoping for one of those, you know, unicorns. I'm hoping for a Nevada elk tag. I'm hoping for a great New Mexico elk tag. I'm hoping for a Arizona rut hunt. You know, I'm hoping for one of those. Chances are probably not going to happen. So my best bets, Colorado, Idaho general season, maybe Montana general combo, or hopefully that special limited quota permit, but that's kind of where I'm at for elk. I do feel good in the fact that like I'm going to get an elk tag somewhere. So there's always, I apologize. There's always an elk tag. And I stress that. I mean, one of the things I hear pretty much everybody I talk to or I hear on other podcasts, you know, I continually hear it that tags are getting harder to draw. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and tell you that that's not true because it is. It just is. We had a unique discussion with Randy Newberg in the office yesterday. You know, he brought up hunter demand, or I did, you know, maybe an increasing demand for permits, but there's also, you know, it's something I don't always think about is like there's herd dynamics. So sometimes there's just less elk to hunt, you know, maybe there's, the habitat shrunk, the, corridors, migration corridors, winter range, summer range shrinks, you know, you got predation from wolves and grizzlies. Some of those herds are shrinking. There's just less hunting opportunities, but you know, whatever the case, it does seem that, you know, there's less opportunities to get permits. But if you're willing to do your homework, which I'm doing right now, and there's no reason that you can't do the exact same thing, there's no reason you can't guarantee yourself an elk tag. And it might not be the best tag in the world, but it's an opportunity to hunt branch antlered bulls. So, you know, do the homework. I guess that's the take home, and I'll touch on it at the end. But do the homework and, you know, apply accordingly, and you'll guarantee yourself an elk tag. So that moves me down to deer. So for deer, I'm in a different situation and I look at deer differently than I look at elk. My value for deer is a little bit different than it is for elk. I love hunting deer, but I am a lot more interested in hunting, you know, maximizing my opportunity for a big deer than maybe I am for elk. I'm completely content to hunt raghorn, you know, 5 point, small 6 point bulls. I'm thrilled with just the archery hunting experience. Whereas with mule deer, I want the opportunity to hunt a big buck. And for me, I like hunting deer close to home. I've always said that, you know, my best bucks, my best chance of killing a big buck is in the unit that's closest to home. And it's because it's a unit that I know, it's a unit I've spent time on, it's a unit that I can scout. And since I live in Southern Utah, you know, I've been able to obtain general season deer tags relatively often. And I've killed some pretty good bucks over the years. So with that, for deer, I'm always going to start with my home state. And I'm not saying everybody's goals are different. I understand that completely. But I would tell people, if you're really interested in a mule deer hunt, and especially if it's a hunt that you want to try to maximize your opportunity to kill a bigger buck, start with the state closest to you. Start with the unit that you know. That kind of information as it pertains to mule deer is way more applicable. It just helps out infinitely. You know, if you can scout the unit, it will give you a massive leg up on trying to kill a bigger buck. So start with the areas that are closest to you. Start with your home state. I have enough preference points to draw a general season deer tag in the state of Utah. So I'm going to start there first. And it's actually one of the tags I'm most looking forward to this coming year. I can draw an archery tag, I can draw a muzzleloader tag, I could probably even draw a rifle tag. And I'm not entirely sure at this point which weapon I will apply for. It's going to depend a little bit, I think, on, you know, how the elk hunts kind of shake out. I kind of always lean towards archery, but I really like muzzleloader deer hunting as well. So there's the opportunity for that. But I am going to, you know, burn my general season deer points in Utah. I think you should burn your points in Utah for general season deer. So if you're listening to this, I think this last year was a really good general season deer hunt in Utah. Everybody I talked to saw a lot of bucks, myself included. I took my 12-year-old Owen out on opening day, and I saw 15 bucks within the first probably 4 hours of light. He killed a really heavy 4-point buck, first buck ever. We saw another buck that was probably better than that buck. So for general season deer, I was beyond thrilled with that experience. And a lot of guys that I've talked to that have hunted a bunch of different units here in Southern Utah, I think had pretty similar experiences. I think there were a good number of bucks. It felt like a really good year for deer in Utah. So I would say, you know, if you're carrying around general season preference points for Utah, I would burn them. I'd come and go on a hunt. You know, moving past Utah, so I already know I'm going to have that tag. I'm carrying a lot of points for deer in other states. So a state like Wyoming, a state like Arizona, I'm carrying a lot of points. I think I've got maybe 14, I want to say 13, 14, something like that. Those states, I really only want to hunt certain types of units. So I'm really only interested in kind of the best units. Specifically when I talk about Arizona, there's really only a few areas that I'm interested in hunting, you know, traveling down to hunt deer. I want the opportunity to hunt a big deer, and there's probably only a couple of units. So I'll keep chasing those. I don't know that I'll draw them, but for me, I would rather chase them. And should I draw those permits, you know, get an opportunity to hunt those types of areas and those types of bucks. Wyoming, man, I am constantly scratching my head with what to do with Wyoming deer. I've heard some really good things about Wyoming deer this last year. It feels like those Western herds have, you know, picked up. It feels like the number of deer maybe are not still on the landscape after that winter kill, but they definitely took some really, really nice bucks. So that's intriguing. It's interesting. I just don't know that I want to burn as many points as I've got to go up and hunt those. So where deer is kind of a, you know, takes a back seat, I should say, maybe a little bit to archery elk for me. I love to hunt them, but I'm probably going to sit on those. I'm probably just going to apply for best of the best units in Wyoming, maybe get a random tag. I feel better about applying for deer up there because that draw is not until May. And, you know, they're not going to sit on my money for 5 or 6 months. Should I not draw, they're going to refund that pretty quick. The cost of the licenses are less. So I will apply for deer and hope I pick up a random permit. And I'll probably apply for the best units. And I think what I'm going to do is I'll probably just keep building those, sitting on them, you know, applying, hoping I get a random permit, and really just try to chase something super special up there. Other states to consider for mule deer. So Nevada, I kind of look at Nevada. I'll apply in Nevada because I've already bought the hunting license to apply for elk and bighorn sheep and those kinds of species. So I'll apply for deer. I don't plan on drawing, and I don't really ever plan on, you know, having a Nevada deer tag. Now, there are some areas, especially for archery, they're easier to draw, that if I built up a few points, if I plug those in, I could probably draw those. Maybe I would put those on as a fifth choice, you know, those Ruby's hunts. And I think it'd be a fun hunt, but they're not really like up there in the top tier of my desires. So, you know, Nevada, I'll probably just take a swing for the fences approach. New Mexico. So I didn't really touch on New Mexico. A lot of people don't talk about New Mexico in regards to mule deer. I think some of it is that they don't want to drive to New Mexico as a non-resident to, you know, hunt the most common bucks that people are killing down there. I do think it's somewhat overlooked, in my opinion. I've seen some really nice deer in New Mexico when I've been on elk hunts. I generally don't apply down there for mule deer because I've got other hunts, like I said, that are closer to home, and that's always going to take precedent over, you know, leaving the state and going somewhere like New Mexico to hunt a deer unit that I probably haven't scouted. So I don't often apply there, but I do think it's overlooked. And I think if you're looking for a mule deer hunt and you don't really have your heart set on any given state or unit, you know, you don't have one that's close to home that looks interesting to you, I think New Mexico should probably be on your radar. I think there's a really good opportunity to go down there and have a fun hunt. Now, you're probably not going to kill the deer of a lifetime, but, you know, the chance to get down there and hunt and harvest and see deer, I think, is really good. So, you know, think about New Mexico. Montana. I don't apply for deer in Montana. it's just too far for me. And it doesn't really provide the type of trophy potential that I'm interested in, to drive up there and pursue. And there's just too many other closer opportunities like Colorado, like Utah, like Idaho, like Wyoming. So that's kind of how I look at Montana. Now, I understand if you're from Minnesota, Wisconsin, maybe some of those northern states, you know, even Washington or Oregon, they're a little bit closer, maybe even northern Idaho. You want to drive to Montana to hunt deer, I totally get it. But for me, I don't necessarily pursue Montana mule deer. Colorado. So Colorado, I probably will just purchase a preference point this year. There's some deer hunts to be had there. I am really interested to see, like I said, in 2028 when that draw changes, you know, what the random odds look like for some of those hunts. So that's a state where I probably am just going to bank a point, probably just going to buy a point. You know, if I didn't have the opportunity to draw a tag in Utah, Colorado would be my next state that I would probably try to capitalize and draw a permit. There's a lot of units for archery specifically that you can draw with very few points. And I do think, you know, we watch these YouTube videos, right, where you see these guys up hunting these giant alpine basins. I think Colorado is the best opportunity for that type of hunt. So if you've seen one of those, you've dreamed for high alpine basins, lush green vegetation, and these big velvet bucks up in those basins, I think it is your best chance. And there are units that you can draw with very few points. So if I didn't have that Utah tag coming my way, you can bet I could probably draw, you know, Colorado and try to do one of those high country hunts. So, you know, think about it though. Colorado is a great mule deer state. I would put it right up there. It's the best state. I mean, it's got more mule deer. It's got more mule deer habitat. It's got more hunt options. It's got everything from archery, a muzzleloader, various rifle seasons, first, second, third, fourth. There's a lot of hunts that you can apply for. So I definitely think if you're a mule deer nut, or even if you're just lightly interested in mule deer, you should be considering Colorado. And at a minimum, you should be building preference points. So that's kind of how I look at it. That leaves me Idaho. So Idaho, I do think I will apply for a general season Idaho deer tag this year. It's just an itch I want to scratch. I just want to go up there and hunt Idaho for mule deer for some reason this year. So I think I'm going to apply in the general season draw. I've got some ideas on some units that I want to apply for. And since I'm applying for the general season deer, I will also pick probably best of the best controlled draw as it comes up later in the spring. And I'll also apply for mule deer there and just hope, you know, cross my fingers that I get one of those permits. So I'm going to apply for mule deer up there. And like I said, the great thing about Idaho, it's just cool that it's completely random. So you just never know. You might as well throw your name in the hat. So with that, I'll have a deer tag, my home state of Utah. I will have an elk tag somewhere. Always want to have, you know, one of those in my pocket of each. Lastly, I have openly talked about my affinity for archery antelope, and it gets seemingly stronger every year. Like, I always want an archery antelope tag in my pocket. Those hunts start early. I always look forward to them. I look forward to that time in the field, that open country, that desert, that prairie. I just love the solitude and being out there at night, you know, camping under the stars. Hot weather, I don't really mind it. I like sitting in a blind. I like the spot and stock game. So those archery antelope tags, I got to have one in my pocket every year. So with that, Wyoming is my very favorite antelope state. I've got enough preference points this year to draw an antelope tag in the state of Wyoming. I always will purchase preference points in Colorado. I've got a few in Montana. I'm on a waiting period in Utah and Nevada. I've drawn antelope tags there in recent years, so I'm on a waiting period. As soon as I come off those waiting periods in Nevada, I will once again apply for antelope. In Utah, you know, I'll go back applying for limited entry elk when I'm off that waiting period. So I have to pick one as a resident. So that'll be kind of my plan there. I do have a few points in Arizona, but those permits are so extremely hard to draw that I only ever, you know, really apply for the best units. And I hope that I get lucky and draw a random tag. And I kind of look at my application in Arizona for antelope like a $15 raffle ticket, or, you know, just a donation to the state of Arizona. Some years I will apply in New Mexico. It is a random draw. Normally I only apply in New Mexico for antelope if I don't have any other, or my opportunities are pretty limited in picking up an antelope tag in some other state. So while New Mexico is, I would say it still is a great antelope state, I would say that as far as the DIY public land hunter, it is not what it was, prior to the changes that they made, which I want to say were probably 4 or 5 years ago at this point. The quality just isn't quite the same. The opportunity to hunt is not as good as it once was. So I think those antelope permits in New Mexico are a little bit less interesting than they once were for me. So I normally only apply there if I don't have an antelope tag lined out in another state. Hopefully I said that right as I play that back in my mind. Couple other states. I already mentioned Colorado. Colorado is a true preference point state right now, so I can predict. And as I look at my strategy, my plan would be to draw Wyoming antelope this year, followed by Colorado antelope next year. I do have bonus points that I've been purchasing in Montana. I can draw that 900 tag pretty much anytime I want going forward. So I will just keep banking those until I don't have an antelope tag somewhere else. Another state is Idaho. So Idaho does have controlled draw hunts for archery antelope. They've got some that are harder to draw based on the quality and the limited hunting pressure. They also have some that are, in essence, guaranteed, unlimited, if you apply for them in the draw as a first choice. So Idaho is kind of becoming my back pocket antelope permit. I'm going to keep it in there just in case I need it. It's always my backup, right? So that there are units up there that I can apply for as my first choice in the control hunt draw, for archery hunts that I can draw guaranteed. And it just always gives me an opportunity to go up and hunt antelope. So antelope's in a good situation right now. You know, hopefully those herds continually rebound in states like Wyoming. Hopefully they keep getting better. And, you know, like I said, as long as you kind of play the system, multi-game, multi-state system, you should be able to guarantee yourself an antelope tag every year. And I speak specifically to bow hunting because that's mostly what I do. Arguably, it's going to be a lot harder when you start talking about rifle hunts because there's more demand for those. So you may not be able to do that, but from a bow hunter's perspective, you know, I can pretty well guarantee myself an antelope tag somewhere. So with that, as you can hear, I play the game. I play the multi-state game. You can too. You can do it. as long as you're up to speed on how all the state draw systems work, it's really reasonable to think that you can hunt deer, elk, and antelope pretty much every single year. I often get asked about cost. How much does it cost to apply in all these states and, you know, for the different species that I apply for? So I've tallied it up over the few years, maybe the last 3 years. It's gotten a little bit more expensive, but I would suggest to you that my annual Western big game application budget is right around $2,500 to maybe $2,800. It's not cheap. You know, you're pushing $3,000 in some cases. I could definitely push that above and beyond $3,000 pretty easy if I applied for some other, you know, states or species that I haven't, because I just don't think it's worth it. But for that deer, elk, antelope, and then maybe some of the other, you know, quote unquote, once in a lifetime type species, you're going to be into that about $2,500, maybe $2,800 bucks every single year. How do I look at it? I look at it as something like I really value. It's something that I love to do. I look forward to it every single year. It's kind of my breath of sanity once a year where I get to get out and just kind of clear my mind and, you know, be in nature and kind of challenge myself. It's something I plan for. So for me, it's something like I really value highly. And, you know, if that's kind of the same boat that you land in, I think it's completely worth it. You can spend whatever money you want, depending on, you know, how much your budget is or even what your values are. But, you know, I would say do the homework, do the research, and kind of put together a strategy and, you know, play the game so that you can sure you get a chance to go hunting. A few other species that I haven't mentioned. So I didn't mention black bears. I'm not a big black bear hunter. I love them. I think they're incredible animals, but springtime for me normally gets so busy with work and family that I can't realistically do, you know, those black bear hunts every spring. I do apply for black bears here in my home state of Utah. I got a little bit inquisitive the other day and I pulled up the draw odds to see kind of where I'm at. I've got a number of points that I've built up over the years, and I think I've got about a 50% chance of drawing one of these spring, maybe early summer bait tags this year. So I'm really hoping that that comes through and I draw that tag. Baiting bears, you know, people can argue about whether it's ethical or not. I think it's awesome. I think it's really, really fun. I think it's an opportunity to get out during a great time of year. All the grass is greening up. It's just fun, man. You get your bait in, you know, Utah will allow you to run some trail cameras. So you take some pictures, you know, sit in a tree stand or a saddle, and you get a chance to watch those bears come in and be bears. And I just, the times that I've done it, I've absolutely loved it. And I think it would be a really fun opportunity to get my kids out, you know, get them involved in the baiting process, and then, you know, maybe hang a couple tree stands and, you know, get my kids out in a tree to just watch some bears. I'm really looking forward to that. And I'm really crossing my fingers, putting the vibes out into the universe that I draw that permit, because I think it'd be a ton of fun. I also did not talk about some of these other species, maybe some of the more adventure style hunts, you know. So I'm talking Alaska blacktail, maybe some moose hunts up there in Alaska. You know, Texas Audat, I've done that one before. Hawaii, going down there and hunting axis deer. New Zealand, I went this last May, we hunted tar. Those are all hunts that are out there, and they're a ton of fun to do, and I've done a lot of them. I've done most of them at least once. The issue with those is they're just expensive. So they're kind of pricey. Some are more manageable than others, but you still, the cost is high. You've got to plan for them. You got to save for them. You know, the biggest problem with those, I wouldn't even call it a problem. The biggest challenge for those in a lot of ways is just logistics. It takes a lot of timing and preparation, and it takes some savings. If I had to rank some of those that I've done in the past, I would probably put New Zealand tar right up there. Texas Audad would be very, very close. That was a ton of fun. If you're looking for a hunt that's just a pure adventure style hunt, an incredible landscape, I think Sitka Blacktail on Kodiak Island is an incredible adventure. It's unfortunate that right now, you know, a non-resident can only get one permit up there. You know, the times that I've been up there, we could buy up to three permits. Hopefully, I would love to see that tip back our way for non-residents so they could get a couple permits at least, so that when you made the trip all the way up there, all the logistics, all the travel, all the expense of that, you know, you at least get a chance to kind of hunt a couple of bucks. Those are all hunts that are completely doable and a lot of fun. And I would say, I don't know if you can do them every year. I certainly can't, but I think it's fun to mix some of those in, you know, every few years, try to go on some of these adventure style hunts. And like I said, there's a lot more of them out there that I didn't mention, but those are kind of the ones I've done and I would put near the top of my list. I also did not talk that much about species like moose in the lower 48 or bighorn sheep, mountain goat in Colorado. I apply for moose, sheep, goat in Colorado. I apply for bighorn sheep and mountain goat in Nevada. I apply for bighorn sheep in Arizona. I apply for bison in Utah. And I will always apply for those species, knowing full well that it's highly unlikely I'll ever draw. But the hope of getting one of those opportunities, it keeps me in the game. And I think for a lot of these states now where you have to buy a hunting license to apply, even if you just wanted to apply for one species, you have to buy that hunting license, non-refundable in most cases. I would say for the minimal application fee, throw your application in for some of these once-in-a-lifetime species like bison or mountain goat or moose. Because you never know when lightning might strike, you might draw the tag and get to go on a hunt of a lifetime. And that's kind of how I look at that. I also think it's just like a, you know, a donation back to Game and Fish to kind of help them with their process every year. But yeah, I'm really hoping to draw one of those at least once in my lifetime. And then finally, I'm going to go on a whitetail hunt this year. It might be South Dakota. It might be Kansas. It might be Illinois or Oklahoma. It might be some other state. I don't even know, but I am going on a whitetail hunt this year, maybe the tail end of October, the first week of November. I know that in the last few weeks, I've been consuming more and more whitetail content than probably I ever have in my whole life. And I'm just becoming so increasingly fascinated with that entire process of whitetail hunting. I just, you know, figuring out which direction the wind blows based on where you think the deer are at during a given time of day, or what tree to hang your stand in your saddle, or the trails or the food plots, just whatever it is. I just am so interested and fascinated with it. I will go on a whitetail deer hunt this year. So that's going to kind of round out my season. So to kind of recap what I'm looking at this year, I'm looking at an archery antelope tag early on in August. I'm looking at a September archery elk hunt, probably in Colorado, hopefully in Montana, maybe in Idaho. One of those, we'll just have to see how it plays out. I'm looking at a mule deer hunt here in my home state of Utah. I have not ultimately decided whether I'm going to do archery or muzzleloader. I will do one of those. I am hopefully looking at an Idaho deer tag. Again, I'm not going to divulge too much, but I'm hoping for, you know, maybe a late season tag up there. I'm looking at a whitetail hunt somewhere. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. I'm really also hoping that maybe successful shows up in my inbox for one of these species like bison or sheep. And that would really mix up everything. You know, I would really have to change my entire schedule and ideas for what I want for a hunting season if one of those showed up successful. But, you know, I'm not going to turn it down if they do. With that, I'm going to wrap up. Hopefully there were some tidbits in there that can kind of help you. That certainly wasn't a breakdown of each individual state or, you know, draw system. We're going to do videos. We always do at Go Hunt. Those will probably hit our YouTube page. So if you want to kind of know about the individual systems, you probably look for those in the future. What I will say is do your research, plan, and apply. Play the game. I think it's completely worth it. I'll wrap up with maybe a little story. So I was in Arizona, late archery hunt just a few weeks ago, and made a stalk on a bull, ended up getting him killed. I had some time where I was waiting for Neville to walk across the two canyons to get over to me to where he could help me out, maybe get some photos. And I just sat there. So I was just kind of sitting there with this bull. He was hung up in a tree really bad. Ended up having to cut a bunch of branches and stuff to kind of freeze antlers and lower him off this little ledge to get him down to a spot that I could work on him. But I was just kind of sitting there and the sun was setting and I just was thinking, you never know. Like, you really never know when it's going to be the last one. And I know that might sound dark. It didn't hit me dark. Like, I didn't feel sad about it. I didn't feel bad about it. You know, I didn't take it in a dark way, but I did think, you just don't know when it's going to be the last one. You know, this might be the last archery elk I ever kill. And what it did for me is it made me really grateful. I had a lot of gratitude. Like, I just felt incredibly happy that I've had that experience, and I've had so many other experiences. It just made me really grateful. And I say that at the tail end of this podcast, because if you don't plan, if you don't get the permit, if you don't make these hunts come to fruition, you're not going to even have the opportunity to make those memories. So I would encourage you to make the memories, do the research, get the permit, put the plan together, go out and do the thing, because those things are lasting. You know, those memories, they never leave you. You'll always remember them. You're going to have those experiences with your friends and family when you're out there. Even if you're hunting solo, there's been so many profound experiences that I've had that have just, you know, impacted me, and, you know, really, I'll never forget them. So, you know, play the game, get a tag and go hunting. So with that, that's the podcast for the week. Hopefully you enjoyed it. If you got questions, feel free to reach out to me. Also, I'm really bad at this and I hate asking, but if you like the podcast, leave me a review. It helps the algorithm, whatever the algorithm is. So leave me a review, and I would really appreciate that. And with that, we'll see you next time.